little guy is, but I love what he's adding. For me, it is profound. In early centuries, until Christianity became the state religion in about the 3rd century CE, it was not uncommon for monks or priests or any sort of religious scholar to abandon the city and political life in favor of living alone in the wilderness. These individuals deprived themselves of most things we take for granted. The food they had was granted to them by strangers. They ate what they found at times. Their shelter, if they had any, was marginal. And they devoted their lives to religious and spiritual contemplation. And I don't know about you, but I get this choice. This choice at times really makes sense to me. We will always have and need these sort of individuals whose life path leads them away from day-to-day activities and toward a life of contemplation and prayer. Many of the leaders of our peace movements began with just such a practice. And there is something immensely compelling about such a life, to dedicate oneself totally and entirely to bettering the world. And not unlike the time in which we live now, there were moments when fleeing the cities, the politics, and the seeming impending ruin seemed like a very sane choice. The problem with this movement, though, asceticism, it was called, it became so popular that the church had to ban it because they were losing their best and the brightest. Those with the most potential for change were simply fleeing the system. And we see this happening now. We're talking about adapting to problems like climate change rather than trying to solve it any longer. Some individuals are giving up entirely and living off the grid. And even the best of the politicians we have in our state and federal governments are giving up and walking away, unable or unwilling to work in the political gridlock that now exists. And in this void, what moves into this void is a sense that we don't need to be of this world. There are many unaffiliated Christian churches that preach this, that preach that what you do in this world does not matter. It's whether or not you get into paradise that is the question. I don't need to worry about the physical world around me. I can simply wait for the day of judgment and hope that my way into paradise is granted. I can't accept either of these answers. So in theory, I'm with the ascetics. I want to step back a minute. In theory, I get the desire to leave the crowds, the costs, and the pollution. Life is better elsewhere, it seems sometimes. The grass is greener. One more move and I'll be happy. Life will be perfect. But that's not true. So we don't have the choice of either fleeing where we are or ignoring our world altogether in hope for a better one. Our faith as Unitarian Universalists calls us to faith in action, and that action is required here and now. The question then is one of how we best help the world. The Clash, a great 80s British punk band, asked the question better than anyone else I know: should I stay or should I go? And that's the question we all struggle with. Do I stay in this house, this country, this marriage, this community, this church? So being a youngish seminarian, youngish, I thought about this a lot. And I found that my answer in Jesus. Yeah. That was my spouse, by the way, laughing at me. Yes, I found my answer in Jesus. I look for models of people that get what ministry is about. And Jesus' ministry was remarkable. He stayed And he went. He spent 40 days in the desert, learning about himself, his spirituality, his demons, and the divine. He was the ultimate itinerant preacher. He spread the word when and how it was needed, be that on a fishing boat or in front of the Romans. He worked in community and kept close counsel with his best friends. And he fought against the system when it didn't work. He pushed the moneylenders out of the temple, rightfully telling them they had no place there. He fought against institutionalized authority, not solely by his preaching, but more important, by his many demonstrations of inclusiveness. And he broke pretty much every social rule, every social moray of the time, by inviting those most marginalized, the poor and the unclean, to eat with him. And he did this within the confines of the world in which he lived, right up until the time that he was wrongly crucified as a heretic. And I know, and thank you, Cynthia, that it's all too easy as Unitarian Universalists to reject Jesus' ministry. It gets all tied up in our minds and our hearts with current evangelical calls to be not of this world. But on the contrary, I believe what Jesus' ministry calls us to is to be fully and entirely in this world. It's not that we have to, or that I'm advocating for us to see Jesus as a messianic figure. Perhaps as a teacher and preacher, however. And I'll admit, as a creedless religion, we have the right and opportunity to accept or reject any doctrinal demands. So let's try it from a different perspective. There are many faith traditions that look at Jesus as a metaphysical being. That means that Jesus' actions, healing the lepers, feeding 5,000 with a single loaf of bread, are not seen as miracles. Quite to the contrary, Jesus' divinity is not special or different. The notion is that we are all God. We are all divine. Jesus' miracles are simply a manifestation of his ability to live fully into his divinity. That's exactly what my mom spoke about, that she moves in and out of divinity from moment to moment. And I want to explain this one other way, because it's important to me that you hear it. The God light, the spirit of light, whatever you want to call it, resides in each of us already. It is there. It is that bright internal light, what Buddhists call bodhicitta, that lights the path of change that we need. It is what enables us to come into our own and by extension to heal the world. As I watch current social movements, social change in the world, young adults moving back into cities and beginning to heal blighted areas, ages, all ages flocking to urban farming and farmers markets, to name but two of many positive social trends. That's what I see. All of these lights of individual divinity coming together, lighting the way for change. And somewhat unfortunately, what comes to mind is the elder George W. Bush's 1,000 points of light. But maybe I'll grant him this one. These lights of hope are indicators of our belief in our ability to render change. So here's the question: why are we not lit up, each of us, like beacons all of the time? Our universalist statement of universal salvation tells us that we are whole and we are perfect just as we are. There is nothing we must do or be in order to grow into our divinity. Here's the problem. Most of us don't know about our own divinity. My guess is that most of us were raised under some form of what was originally Calvinist theology that taught us to be seen and not heard as children, to be a good spouse before attending to our own needs, to put family first, and so much else. It was important to be taught to be good stewards, but it also inaccurately placed an emphasis on ignoring our own souls. We were taught not to want, not to hear our heart's own desires. But until we own those desires, we don't own our divinity. Until we begin to see all of who we are, we can't see that bright light inside us. And until we access that light, we can't heal the world. Theologian and ecofeminist Joanna Macy believes that right now there is just this sort of change occurring. A drift, a huge space in our collective soul opening up, affirming our rightful need to claim what is most ours, our very lives. And the benefits are endless. When you know your heart, it is easier to hear and connect with those whose values and beliefs differ from your own. When you know what you truly want and need, a sense of clarity permeates your actions. So my charge to you today is this, in the words of Howard Thurman, as we look at our troubled, fractured world, figure out what it needs. Don't leave yourself out of the equation. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. May it be so. Please rise as you're willing and able and join us in singing hymn number 100, Peace Like a River.